You're listening to the Mets Blog Q&A Cast, presented by Citi, your podcast for one-on-one Mets conversations.
What's up, Mets fans? I'm Matt Cerrone. Thanks for listening to the Mets Blog Q&A Cast, presented by Citi. Mets home runs go a lot further than you think. For every Mets home run hit at Citi Field this season, Citi will donate $2,000 to No Kid Hungry to help fight childhood hunger. Every dollar donated provides 10 healthy meals for kids. Last season, the Citi Community Home Runs program raised over $170,000. To learn more about it, go to Mets.com/Citi. This week I'm talking to New York Post columnist Kevin Kernan, who does a terrific job covering the Mets and Yankees, New York baseball for New York Post. He does a great job. He started out in San Diego as a beat writer, ton of experience. I love the way he kind of looks at the game and gets a feel for clubhouses and management and all kinds of issues surrounding these baseball teams. So it seemed like a good time to bring him in, talk to him a little bit about the story of the season, unfortunately, what it's been, and maybe where it's going and where it could end up. So with that, let me run my conversation this morning with New York Post reporter Kevin Kernan. Let's go back to spring training when, you know, optimism was in the air and you're coming off a World Series, the Mets, and expectations are high and all that's going on. Compared to that team and what you're seeing now, you're out in San Francisco with them right now. You've been out at Citi Field throughout the season. As the year's gone along, what have you seen from them in terms of just, you know, their demeanor, their character, that sort of stuff, as things have sort of gone along this season and they've taken, you know, what has really changed expectations, I think, and sort of where we are right now?
Yeah, they've obviously everything's changed a little bit from spring training. They were looser, all the fun they had in spring training, yep. The horses, the vehicles, you know. But I think they still had that feeling like we're going to be fine, we're going to be there. And I think reality is just starting to set in now. I think. What happened, some of these losses I've been complaining lately. Last night's loss was just brutal for them. DeGrom, you saw it in his face.
Yeah, the first game of the Giants series, plus dipping below 500. You're right. It was really like a little slap in the face. Like you said, a wake up.
And they still think, too, and here's the other thing, Matt. They think even going into that game last night with Terry Collins and some of the players, and even after the game, some of the players were saying that with the return of Cespedes from the DL, they'll be getting somewhat of the cavalry back. But if you look, it's been one thing after another. Even little things, which is a big thing, but it's a little thing in the scope of things when you look at everything else that's gone wrong. You know, Wheeler having his setback. So the reality of, it's really hard to get back to the World Series. It's really hard to make the postseason. It's really hard not to be a one-year flash in the pan. It's really starting to sink in. And that's when you're going to see, people lose their temper a little bit. Things happen. More about Terry's job for the future. Mm-hmm. Things like that. It's just the... It can become nasty because of the reality of who they are and where they are, and it also shows, and to me this is the biggest thing. I was thinking about this last night during the game. The Cubs were won like 18-21. The Cubs they fired back and got more ammunition, so to speak, and the Mets really they've gone backwards in every way. It's a shame. It's a shame because, you still put if the Mets are healthy and you put that starting rotation together and you face the Cubs in a series, I think the Cubs would still might have trouble beating the Mets just simply because when these pitchers are right, they're really hard to beat. And it's going to be very difficult now. Now we're really going to see the true, at least – the true colors of what these players are made of right now. And I'm not even talking about ability. I'm sure. Talking about how they handle things.
Absolutely. And it's going to, I think this is going to be where Terry Collins, where it gets determined whether or not he's here or not next year. I mean, he's under contract, but I think we all would agree, despite what Sandy says, and he does a great job of talking in the moment. He always answers questions, as he should. He's a CEO.
Yeah, that's a good point.
you know, he and that's what he should do. But I think we all know. I mean, you read the book. You talk to people with the team. I mean, it's obvious that Terry's job is going to be scrutinized here and thoroughly criticized, as it should be by the front office. So, you know, let me give you a couple scenarios. I'm just curious what you think what you feel like might play out. Well, let's say the Mets do play better than they have, and they do kind of get it together, but they fall short, right? They win 83, 84 games. It's clearly less than they were expected to win. They don't get to the playoffs, but they don't totally quit and die. Do you, in that scenario, because that's sort of a, to me, I feel like, I don't know. I don't know which way it goes. I mean, what do you think happens to Terry in that situation? Do you think he's back?
In that situation, I think he's back and on the shortest of leashes for next year.
He's on the hot seat opening day.
Yeah, it's probably the hot seat opening day, and it never changes. Mm-hmm. And even just a small, you know, snippet of what you see being around the team. You know, last night we were in the dugout because we knew an injury was going to be announced. We weren't sure who it was. We're looking out on the field to make sure who's out there, who's not. And you know, Sandy's kind of going to talk to him, but he's not giving us any answers. And there's a group of fans around, and you know, this is the most beautiful park in the world, at T Park, and Mets fans are hovering around a dugout, and one rather obnoxious guy keeps yelling out, "Bud Black, Bud Black, Bud Black," you know, so he's and Terry Sandy happened to be walking right towards the gentleman the one time that I really noticed him yelling it, and so he immediately did a. You know, Marine return about face and started walking the other way, but he had a little snickering grin on his face, like we're out, but here we are. And so I think Terry is probably in big trouble, certainly for next year. Yeah. I don't think he'd be fired this year, but next year I think there's got to be some kind of thing that saves him, and I don't see that right now.
I mean, on the outside, now obviously every fan base for the most part thinks their manager is a terrible in-game manager. I mean, that's just sort of like the way I think it is for fans. Because for the reality is a lot of us, myself excluded, don't really get to see what these guys do in the clubhouse, between games, how they manage the media, how they manage the, you know, all the things that go along with the job, especially in New York. I don't think a lot of fans get to see that. And I do think Terry still does a good job at those things. But, you know, his tirade a couple weeks ago aside, but, even I will look at him and see some of these things during the games that don't make sense. You know, little things, that, you know, the Jay Bruce review and admitting in public that he wasn't really sure that Nimmo was faster than Bruce. And just kind of strange things, the way he's used the bullpen, all these kind of things that I know Sandy Alderson has to be noticing. I mean, Sandy's got a real good read, I feel like, on the team and the organization and the city and all that stuff. I think he gets context really well. So he has to understand this. I mean, do you think he sees it the same way? Maybe, like, does he understand that fan and the crowd that's yelling Bud Black, I guess is really what I'm saying.
Oh yeah. He understands it, and he understands it in every way. And I feel that, you know, never forget his military background.
Right.
Sandy's, as a matter of fact, is a, without mentioning names, when he was in San Diego, you know, president of the team, basically, and one employee did something that was not the Sandy's liking, and the employee was called in for a meeting, and and it was a little out there, the situation. It wasn't so obvious that you could say it's black and white type of thing. And so he called in for a meeting with Sandy, and Sandy presented him. He read this up, this letter of reprimand, and wanted this employee and demanded this employee sign this letter of reprimand. And at first, the employee thought it was a joke, you know. And but that's Sandy. He's got that military background. He keeps notes. He keeps you have a dossier, and you know, he's got everything figured out. He's just not going to say what he's going to do. But I think all those, everything you mentioned, especially the non-challenging thing where Sandy showed his he was upset that day. So Sandy went on record being very upset. And to this day, you know, I asked Terry about that the other day because I wasn't at that game when that happened. And Terry immediately, you know, fell on his sword once again, said, that's something I should have corrected. But I will say this: I'm not giving him out. So all those Mets fans that are already
yeah, no,
on
I,
the
go
ledge,
ahead, go know. Ahead, go ahead.
Where's the bench coach there?
Yeah,
come on,
yeah.
You know, where are some of the other coaches? Certainly the bench coach don't pop Dickie Scott. And nothing mm-hmm. against Dickie Scott, but if you're gonna, you know, if you're gonna get on Terry, Dickie Scott is there for. Basically, he was placed in that position, I think, by Sandy.
Yeah.
And you know, he was he's there to kind of be a safety net, and he's got to be yelling. And Terry's there. We got to get this reviewed too. So Terry screwed up, but so did everybody else. But I'm sure it's on the dossier, and at the end of the year, there will be, you know, this will be one of the factors where it's time to move on. And I don't think Sandy's there to embarrass Terry either. And he knows Terry got him to the World Series last year.
Sure.
And that there's been a string of injuries. When you really step back and look at the injuries,
yeah,
that
yeah.
basically spells out the year, and no team can survive it. So I think Sandy is trying to do the right thing with Terry in that respect, and not just throw him under the bus and make him the fault. He's trying to hold the players accountable, and I
yeah.
think that true goes back to Let's, his military training. But it's there. It's there. Don't doubt about it.
One of my friend of mine that's a fan of the Nationals had sent me a text. It was last night after the Mets thing, and he had said, "Welcome to the club." You know, kind of throwing a shot at last season, because you know they, you know, here we are, Mets fans, all excited. All the, meanwhile, the Nationals really took some major hits last year in terms of injuries, and I think this is maybe how they felt a little bit. Obviously, not coming off a World Series, but going into that season with major expectations, and then taking a whole bunch of bullets throughout the course of the year. You know, do you think that's the story of this? Let's assume things continue as is. I mean, the reality is they've been a 480 baseball team since May 1st. I mean, that's really just unacceptable. And so, I mean, do you think that's the story of this season? We're just going to look back on injuries, and then probably also this past week, the Diamondbacks and the Padres, and going 3-6 against those teams. That those two things, I feel like that's what we'll be talking about, you know, through much of the lamenting about through October and November, probably.
Well, I'm going to take another step. That's going to be the easy story of the
year.
Okay. But I think it's ridiculous because all, you know, like you say, your friends, they've all been through it. All the other teams, the Dodgers this year, everyone, you know, Dodgers lost Kershaw, you know, so teams lose people. There should be enough depth there. And here's the fact, Matt, the bottom line, and this is where I may upset some Met people, but it's so watered down now with the second wild card. There's no excuse for the Mets for that pitching staff not to be in the postseason, in my mind.
Right.
I don't buy it, and I'm not blaming Collins. I'm putting this on the players. This is the players. I felt it in spring training. I know Terry was not happy with all the things with the horses and the things we talked about in the intro. You got to be on your toes from day one. You got to be ready to and. God bless him. David Wright told me when, you know, one of the times you've had me on the show, but way back, and don't forget who was the first guy in spring training other than the players, me.
Right.
And did all those stories, and I remember standing on that backfield with David Wright telling me we better be ready because we got a bullseye on our back. These guys are coming after us, and it's not going to be like last year. Now, David was part of the problem because he couldn't stay healthy, but these guys were not ready. They had a bullseye on their back, and you know what? They're taking shot after shot, and they're not responding. And last night's, you know, with DeGrom giving up a 4-0 lead, as Terry said when I asked him after the game, in a blink of an eye, you know, to the bottom of the Giants' order is just abysmal. And I know the level of the competitor that Jacob DeGrom is. He's the best in my mind. He's the best. Him and Syndergaard are two of the best competitors, and I think DeGrom is the best competitor probably in that clubhouse. So I know he's torn up by that. But the Mets, let's not overlook the fact here, the Mets failed because they still, in my mind, they still had enough talent to get to the postseason. And at the same time, I think Sandy has failed too because the game is changing, and they did not have enough offensive fluidity and ability to make things happen. They're a one-trick pony. That horse, that pony that Cespedes was riding under, buckled, and they have not been able to get back up. And it's ironic if you look at the back page of the Post today with you know, with my story on Cespedes, they did a nice little, like, we're capable of doing. We put him on a horse, you know, and with a funny little face and, you know, kind of a superimposed, a little bigger than you, and it says their only hope. And really, you know, when I started writing that story in the afternoon and updated throughout the game, it is their only hope. And they, I still think they have a shot simply because everybody else is not that good. And you know, the Marlins are there now. That's why I went on this trip. People wonder, you know, I kind of can design my own schedule if they go for it, my office. And, you know, I wanted to go on this West Coast trip because I know things happen. And we, you know, we pretty much know, but we're going to know for sure by Friday, next Friday, you know, where the Mets are after facing the Giants and the Cardinals. But if they turn it around and sweep the rest of the trip, we're going to be saying, wow, that will save Torrey's job. But other than that, if they just continue to fall apart, it's on the players and it's on the way they were built, and that's where we're at.
Again, I'm talking to, I'm going to say it, America's best sports writer, Kevin Kernan.
Well, American Alma. Yes. AMBS, right, there you go. We know.
Kevin Kernan, who does an outstanding job.
America's most beloved.
Oh, most beloved. Right.
Yeah,
oh,
I would never call myself America's best sports writer, but America's most beloved sports writer, a moniker that was hung on me, not by myself, but by Andy McCullough, who was a Mets beat writer the year we were up in, actually he was with the Yankees too, and he went to the Yankees, and we were up in Boston, Fenway Park. America's, and we were there the year we were calling it America's Most Beloved Ballpark. I took a selfie of myself on the field, and we were just killing time, waiting for A-Rod or something. And I walk over to Andy, and I say, hey, and Andy has a very dry sense of humor. I say, hey, it's a pretty good little selfie. And it was a good little selfie with Fenway, the monster in the background. He goes, America's Most Beloved Ballpark, America's Most Beloved Sports Writer. You know, so that's how it all began.
Well, in either case, you do an outstanding job for the New York Post. People can follow you on Twitter at Where's Kernan. Before I let you go, so, I mean, do you think that ultimately is what this comes down to? And I hate to say this, but, I mean, is Cespedes on his horse, the cavalry? Like, is that really, in the end, what we're looking for here? Looking for Cespedes to just get hot? Hopefully it gets Jay Bruce out of his funk and things just spread? I mean, is that really what it's come down to, you think?
That's exactly what it's come down to. And play, it's an emotional game, Matt, and this is the thing. It's such a... And the game has changed in many ways, too, as well, you know, with players having the energy to complete a season because of all kinds of things, as you well know. And so Cespedes will give them a boost. If they had won, I'm telling you right now, if they had survived, won that game, they get the big grand slam. If they won last night, and then you get Cespedes walking into that clubhouse today, you got a whole different mental team of Mets. Mm-hmm. Now, you will get a boost from him being there, but they really blew a golden opportunity last night. And that will be... I think when you dissect the year at the end of the year, this will be like you said, the Diamondbacks. Certainly, the way they were just pummeled by the Diamondbacks, and pointing to that, their ace, their, you know, DeGrom giving up a home run to Bumgarner to blow a 4-0 miracle lead that they got off Bumgarner in before three outs are made in the next inning. So that will be it. But Cespedes, I still think Cespedes gives them a shot, and if I'm a Mets fan. I know that Mets fans usually think the worst, but let's let the week play out, and we'll know by Friday, and hopefully Cespedes turns it around and can start driving around. Here's the scary number, when you want to talk numbers, because I understand numbers too. You know, I've been around long enough. I make fun of the analytics to some extent because I think it's overdone. But how about the fact that in the last week, the Mets, who couldn't score runs and had, you know, hit basically 203 with runners in scoring position, how about the fact that they've lost three games in the last week when they scored seven or more runs.
Yep.
That's astounding with that pitching staff.
Well, and that's, you know, it's, I mean, how much stock do you put into them coming off? You know, these are young pitchers. They haven't thrown a ton of innings over the course of their career in a given season. So you're coming off a year where they threw obviously deep into October. You know, how much stock do you put into that being, you know, the year after that they're maybe struggling a little bit, and maybe next year after this season, you know, they might be a little fresher and actually be the staff that they were hoping for. I mean, do you think that that's a very qualitative argument? I don't know how you prove that, but, you know, that's a theory, and I've heard people mention that.
No, it's a good theory. I've talked to Brian Sabian about that because in 2010, I told Brian he was going to win three of the next five World Series. I actually did, and Brian will tell you that, because I saw they had this kid, Bumgarner, and I covered that team a lot when I was in the postseason with them. And he said, you're crazy. I said, no, because you have the pitching, and you guys are a good organization. We'll make some changes that you need to make. And then it all happens, and I've talked to Bochy about this many times. He said the year after they win a World Series, go to a World Series, that they get so beat up, the pitchers physically and mentally, that they can't make that recovery and come back. And they just can't do it. They need help from other ends, and that's what slows them down. Especially, he said, the bullpen guys. It really wears down the bullpen guys. And to the Mets' credit, they tried to reshape the bullpen. They brought in guys like Henderson and things like that. But you know, these were guys that had problems anyway. I think what they should have done, looking back, one of the things the Mets learned is that you just can't have enough really solid, young, healthy bullpen arms. And that's one of the mistakes they made. And I also thought that the pitching staff put themselves in a mental funk. They're worried about I thought the Matt Harvey situation just created too much drama for the whole team. Matt created too much drama. And I think that started the team off on a negative note right from day one.
Again, that was Kevin Kernan from the New York Post. Thanks again for listening to the Mets Blog Q&A cast presented by Citi. Citi card members receive up to $10 off per ticket with this Citi perk when they use their Citi card to purchase tickets for Sunday Mets home games. To learn more about it and to purchase tickets, go to Mets.com/Citi. Thanks again to Kevin Kernan. Before I let you go, don't forget to check out this week's Inside the Park with SNY Mets reporter Steve Gelbs. He sits down with Wayne Randazzo from 710 WOR. They also talk about the state of the Mets, pace of game issues, and the concept of quote-unquote bullpenning, which is kind of fancy. We'll be back again next week with another Q&A cast. Hopefully we get some wins here and get this season back on track. Clock's ticking, time's running out. Still got to believe. As always, let's go Mets!
This has been the Mets Blog Q&A cast, presented by Citi, part of the SNY.TV audio network.